Hello and welcome to the First Take Film Club podcast. My name is Luke Chanley, and today we're covering possibly the greatest comedy film of all time and one of the greatest British movies of all time in Monty Python's Life of Brian. But before we take on that title, I'll introduce you to my two co-hosts, Connor Norcott and Liam Jones. Connor, how are you, mate?
I'm very good. I feel like I keep like brushing the hair out of my eyes like I'm in a Herbal Essences advert because I'm in desperate need of a haircut. But apart from that, I'm really good. I'm really good. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good. Thanks a lot, mate. Yeah, quite. It's been has it been 2 episodes since I was last on the podcast because of just life. It has, hasn't it?
I think so,
We
yeah.
did. I think you guys did the wonderful Eternal Sunshine pod, didn't
Yes,
you?
yep.
With some fantastic guests, and then it was what was the week before was something that I couldn't make, I think.
No, I think the week before was Citizen Kane, which
Oh, was it?
you were there for
Oh
that,
yeah, God, that doesn't say very much. I can't even remember it.
yeah.
moving swiftly on, Liam, man, how are you?
Yes, very good. Thank you very much. Although I have just spilt a coffee on my arm and my belly and all over my sofa. And
Oh.
it really hurt. It really hurt. But you know what? We move. We move.
We move. We haven't got. No one's got time to think about scoldings in 2020,
No, absolutely no time to think about
have
scoldings. So
they?
we'll just get on with it because
Yeah.
I kind of have to. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. It kind of like the pain has ceased, well, slightly, and the redness has gone down. And now I'm just fully focused on Monty Python and the Life of
Amazing.
Brian.
Maybe what we'll do is I'll come back to you at the end of the episode and be like, has the pain increased or decreased? Can you give me a popcorns on
Oh,
the
yeah.
pain? okay, cool. Well, we'll move on from the scolding story. I've got an open question I didn't really tell you, but like I don't think it'll be that hard a one. It's just a your favorite question. So, opening question, what is your favorite comedy of all time? Does anyone have a preference to go first? I mean, I haven't even thought about this, so.
I can go for it. I literally just looked at the agenda about 20 seconds before you said that. And I thought, off the top of my head, I thought Hot Fuzz. And I think that is my favorite comedy. Is it completely a comedy?
I
No.
think,
But
yeah.
it's at least half of it is a comedy. There's
Yeah, yeah.
so many laugh out loud moments in there. And I don't normally watch like comedy films. This is a running theme on this show that I'm a bit of a miserable git. I don't know what it is about Hot Fuzz, but every time I watch it, I'm always laughing. And it's one of those things where when you know the jokes are coming, they get even
Okay.
funnier. And I think I find films with comedic moments rather than comedy films funnier, but I'm still gonna have to pick Hot Fuzz.
I think Hot
Yeah.
Fuzz is a comedy.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I kind
it
of
is.
agree.
Yeah, I can't say
I'd have to,
Liam.
I see, I couldn't for the life of me pick like a traditional comedy per se that I would stick on. I don't ever think, oh, I'm going to put on a comedy, but like Connor, I'll put on something that uses comedy, in a good, in a really kind of interesting way. I'm probably going to have to agree with Connor in Hot Fuzz. I know that's probably a really lazy answer,
I don't think it is. I don't think
given
it is.
it.
I think it's actually quite like kind of. It's not the right answer, but like it's really close to being the right answer, I
Like
think.
Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead, just to stick with Edgar Wright, like they are both masterpieces, I think, in my opinion, in terms of like subverting their genre and making it funny as hell. I think randomly, well, it's not so random, maybe it is random, but I really, really love, and this one is just a comedy. I really love I Love You Man with Paul Rudd.
Big
It's
film.
just It's just silly, and I love Paul Rudd. Yeah, there's a bit where Paul Rudd does his bit, and he goes, "Slap the bass," and I
I
gave it a bit more that time.
like that.
And yeah, it's just brilliant. It's just silly and brilliant and funny and stupid. And I love Paul Rudd. Like I love him in comedy films. He is kind of great. I think him and probably him and Adam Sandler and probably Steve Carell are kind of like my faves. Or then you kind of like if you go further back, then I do kind of I like some Steve Martin films as well. I do like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles as a classic. It's like, and that is actually really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The scene where he's in the airport with and swearing at the what do you call her? Like the flight person lady.
Oh yeah.
Did you like that on Twitter recently?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. So I saw you liked it, and then I watched it again and was like, this is such a good scene.
Yeah.
amazing. You've kind of out of like three that I would honestly would have probably chosen, mm-hmm. pardon me, you've like boxed off two of them probably. Like I Love You Man, I was thinking when so Connor said Hot Fuzz and I was like, okay, well I won't go with Hot Fuzz, so it's kind of like I Love You Man or the two that I'm going to pick anyway, which is Life of Brian, which we're doing today, which is amazing,
mm-hmm.
or and I don't know if this is straight out comedy, Ghostbusters. I think Ghostbusters is it. Because like I feel like in a way it's not as obviously funny as Hot Fuzz, but it's like that same thing, isn't it, where it's actually like another genre, but then there's funny bits in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go with them too. And I, you know what? I'm really happy I asked that question because I'm just always generally intrigued as to what you guys think is the best comedy. And I may as well just have asked one of you because I feel like you're both the same when it comes to comedy, really.
Yeah. But, I think Liam's a bit more forgiving than I am. I'm an asshole about it.
He's a bit more open to the comedy. Okay, great. Well, now we know that. Little factoids about each other. Let's move straight on to the movie. So we are, like I said earlier, covering Monty Python's Life of Brian. It came out in 1979. It had a £4 million budget and made 20.7, so nearly 21 million at the box office. It was directed by Terry Jones and written by the Pythons themselves. And if you are looking to watch this film, it's available on Netflix, along with, honestly, like just 10 other Python titles of mm-hmm. various varieties. So it's like, it's just the best place for Python at the moment, Netflix. So let's just talk a bit about the plot, because it literally is like almost a sentence or two, isn't it, really? Mm-hmm. This guy called Brian gets mistaken for the Messiah. And then we just follow this man's journey through his life by being mistaken for the Messiah. This was, so obviously we are called the First Take Film Club and one of us has a first take every week. And this week it was Connor. Connor, let's just hear general thoughts. What was your first take like? How did you find the film and general enjoyment points?
Yeah, just off the top, I absolutely loved it. Like, no, I'm not going to say for some big suspense reveal at the end of the podcast, it genuinely was really, really good. And I thought it was awesome. And it's exactly what I needed yesterday. I said off air, I had this really long, painstaking lecture on slow cinema. And some of it involved watching some good films. We watched a little bit of Tarkovsky, filmmaker I really like, made a lot of slow fucking films, though. And then we watched this one that just... it just sent my head west. And thankfully, I turned my camera off on the lecture so I could just watch it peace, but also felt myself falling asleep. So by the time that lecture ended, I was like, right, I need something to perk me up, get me going again. And I stuck on The Life of Brian. And it was just everything I wanted. It was funny, but it was also quite smart and it doesn't treat you like a dickhead. It, you know, there's jokes there to be inferred. You don't have to just get them from punchlines. You get them from almost the things that aren't said. And I love stuff like that. It's really smart, really witty. And it was kind of my first, I think it is probably my first introduction to the work of the Pythons. I think the only guy I'm semi-familiar with is Terry Gilliam. And he only did the set design on this. So yeah, it was two big thumbs up for me.
Amazing. That is such a great review of one of my favorite comedy films. And I also feel like that was a really easy, quite concise first take. Like, we usually just end up going on.
Ramble.
Yeah. Because in the most respectful way in the world, the films that we usually pick are slightly more complicated than the plot line we've just given. So mm-hmm. it's nice to be able to box it off quite early. Liam, so me and you have seen this movie a few times. What are your, just give me some of your general thoughts on the film.
Yeah, it's just great, isn't it? It is great. I think I watched this probably, I don't know, maybe if I was a bit too young when I first watched this, but I never kind of found, I don't think it's an offensive film, where look, sometimes they do push the boundaries. I guess maybe they do in a sense, I don't know if maybe you're offended by taking the Mickey out of religion and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when I like watching it and when I was a kid, what I think the main thing that stood out for me was that song at the end, "Always Look on the Bright Side of Life," and it's probably their most famous like thing that they've ever done in terms of how it's reached kind of the world. In terms, everyone knows that song. If you don't know Monty Python, you know that song. And
did they make that song?
Yeah, Eric, really?
Yeah. I thought it was one of those bits where they just put a song in. It's 1979, so yeah, they probably
imagine that song being like 100 years old. It's like older than
it's in the Bible, isn't it? Yeah.
I think it was Jesus who once said, "Look on the bright side of life."
It is great though. It's brilliant. What I really loved about it watching it this time is kind of really appreciating how difficult it is for the Pythons to play so many characters,
mm-hmm.
and still kind of make the film cohesive and not kind of it doesn't, because there are some scenes where one scene John Cleese is one character and then it cuts to the next it cuts to maybe like a reaction shot from what John Cleese's one character is saying, and it cuts to like a reaction shot and John Cleese is there again but as another character, and but it doesn't take away from it. It doesn't, they're so kind of like the makeup and that and the costumes are kind of so convincing and they kind of blend into each character that they play that it's just really impressive. And I was thinking like it must have been like quite difficult to edit, trying not to fuck up the fact that there are all of the Pythons playing about 10 plus different characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really kind of impressive. And that's kind of like one of the main things I took from it this time. I think to give them credit for like what they do in that sense, I probably never noticed it before because they are so good at kind of blending into them different characters that they each play, which is kind of, I know like that's their thing. Like when they do their live shows, that's kind of like, that's what they do. They're kind of constantly changing costumes and playing different characters. Like that's their thing. And they just do it so well. I don't think there's any kind of comedy act that has done it or will ever do it as good as as good as Monty Python.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good summary. I noticed that as well, actually, funnily enough. I think, because Connor's right in saying it is a smarter film, and they are a smarter comedy group, I think. They don't patronize the audience, but I noticed that, like you say, just like the reaction shots, or they're addressing one particular character played by one Python, and then you shoot back to a crowd of which six of them are there or whatever. Mm. And it's just like it's really impressive. And I wonder whether, and I don't know the editing team on this and whether it was the same as on the Flying Circus, that the comedy series, but I wonder whether it helped doing sketches, being able to put this together, which is if you take it for what it is, 90 minutes of sketches with a thread of religion in the middle. And I just wonder whether that helped the team be like, kind of put it all together. I don't really know. I don't know if they use the same team. I just think it probably helped a little bit. My opinion is that it's just the best. And honestly, like I could probably just be like, yeah, that's my take. It's the best. I love Monty Python anyway. Like they're kind of like my favorite people in comedy, and they have been for I don't know how long, probably 10 years. And actually, I hadn't watched them long before I decided that. The first coming together I had with anything Python was actually Bright Side of Life. I think it kind of is, isn't it, with everyone? But actually, that was the last song played at my granddad's funeral, which is just like obviously I didn't know then, and I back then it was kind of just one of them songs that just like older people knew, and yeah. Like, yeah, it was just one of them things that was always
been around,
like crap discos or whatever, and it's just like, oh, I didn't even really like it. And then you kind of like you're at a funeral, and then the last song that's played is always look on the bright side of life, and you're kind of just like, fucking hell, what's this doing on here? And it's like, you're just laughing at this thing that obviously my granddad purposely chose it. And then obviously, like, then you're just like, oh, well, who are these people? Like, I know Monty Python, I know what they are. And when I was younger, didn't like older things. Like, I wanted new music, I wanted new comedy, I wanted new films. Wasn't interested in what happened in the 70s. And then you look into it, and then that's where it started, really. But I just think this is, like, genuinely, like, I think I wrote it in the chat, just, like, every scene, every single scene is a classic scene where, like, you could very easily have been like, oh, I haven't heard of Python, but I've heard of What Have the Romans Done For Us, or I've heard of, the graffiti scene, or anything like that. And that's what I just love. And it's not, like, I imagine if you are a certain way inclined, just like with anything, you may find it offensive, but it is, what I like about it is quite inoffensive, in like, there's the odd swear word, but it's mostly just six fully grown men being daft as fuck, and it's just, I just love it. It's just like my perfect type of comedy. So I just, you know, I can't wait to get to my popcorns, but I just love it, really. All right, go on. Sorry,
I was just gonna say, I do prefer The Holy Grail, just because I think that was the film that was kind of like the film that put them into the kind of stratosphere of the legends of comedy. Obviously, their TV show was super popular, but then their TV, the Holy Grail is just, I think, personally, I think it is a better film as well. I think it's a funnier film. Not that, I think The Life of Brian's brilliant as well, but if it's possible, Holy Grail is even better. I do laugh more at The Holy Grail. I think it's kind of dafter, and I think the jokes, for some reason, kind of connect with me a little bit more, and I do properly like laugh out loud to that all the time whenever I watch it. I think they are geniuses, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, some of them are still alive now. John Cleese and Eric Idle and Michael Palin, they're still alive now. And Terry Gilliam's still alive as well. Yeah,
let's not besmirch him with death before his time.
Still making. he's still directing, isn't he? I do like Terry Gilliam, to be fair. I think he's said some questionable things recently in his old age, as has John Cleese. I think Michael Palin and Eric Idle are the only ones that are relatively normal in terms of their views. Michael Palin is like, he's awesome. He does all them travel shows on ITV, doesn't he?
He was in a seminar with me 2 weeks ago through uni. We had a seminar with Michael Palin.
Wow.
And there was like 70 of us in there. And I wasn't really listening, if I'm honest. And I feel like a real dickhead now, because I could have been like, hey, Mike, do you want to come on first take for a little guest appearance?
Michael Palin's a legend.
But honestly, you know what? He speaks really well. And I'm really bad at knowing who is who in this. Do you know what I mean? Like, I know their names. I don't know the face. I didn't like, especially when they're younger, I think I can identify John Cleese because he's a very recognizable dude.
Yeah.
And I think I know who Michael Palin is in this one as well, because now obviously I've saw him in the flesh, even if it is through Zoom or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But I think Michael Palin actually, I don't know if this is off agenda or whatever, but he's actually the guy who stood out the most to me. I think he has the funniest scenes in this by a mile.
Yeah, I think Michael Palin and John Cleese are the best actors out of them all.
Yeah,
I think that they are the two that had gone on to do more acting roles outside of Python as well, which is you know, it's quite obvious to tell. It's obvious as to why that happened, because they are both clearly head and shoulders, I think, above the rest. Like, I really like Graham Chapman, but I don't think he's the best actor, even though obviously
he's Brian, isn't he? Yeah,
he's Brian. Yeah. He is, like, obviously they're all brilliant. Like, they all bring their different kind of quirks to it, don't they? Like Terry Gilliam, although he rarely kind of shows his face. I think he has a few kind of acting roles. Yeah. But he's so heavily involved in the creative aspects of it, like all the artwork and stuff, like the opening scene, you know, and like the scene with the when he when Brian jumps off the building and the spaceship comes and grabs him, like, yeah. like that's like Terry Gilliam heavily in that. And then you've got like Terry Jones, who like directed it. He's sadly passed away this year, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this last year.
And yeah, the direction's pretty cool. I really like the camera work. It's really kind of like, it's almost like a little bit crap, but kind of, but in a way that it's kind of filmed like documentary style,
which is it's really, a bit, yeah,
yeah, which I really like. You kind of like the cat. You see the camera kind of like wobbling as it's like following like Brian running up the stairs or something like that. Like it feels like you're like kind of like there in it, mm-hmm. in this crazy little this little world. It's just yeah, it is just great. I'd love it so much.
I think that's something that really stood out to me is that we talk about this often, that we tend to, when we go back and watch older films, you can kind of, you almost, you know, reverse engineer the inspiration like that it's had. So you've already watched the films that's inspired it. For instance, I love Spinal Tap. Spinal Tap's hilarious.
Never seen it.
This is like the precursor to films like Spinal Tap, to films yeah. like, for want of, like, I don't love Borat, but you don't get Borat without Monty Python. Like, their involvement in comedy is so legendary and so revered. And it's something I really want to get into more. I think we've had some messages saying, like, oh, we should have you, why don't you guys do some like the old comedies like Airplane? That stuff that's completely over my head. I've not saw any of those. And it's something I want to do a bit more of because I think you, Luke, you're quite a big fan of like 80s, like the comedy era. And it's something I'm, I don't know, that kind of interests me, especially if it can live up to the heights of the Pythons, because there's so many little moments in this that I want to touch on, but I feel like that can be touched on in a bigger debate that we'll get onto later. But I just loved it, man. I really, really loved it. It was really cool.
Honestly, that's put a big smile across my face. I love it.
So what do we think about, like, in terms of, like, the message of this film? I know that, obviously, it's not in your face, to be honest. And it doesn't want to take the mickey out of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. I don't think it kind of alienates.
That's the thing, it doesn't at all. It doesn't take the mickey out of that at all.
Religion. I think mm-hmm. what it does highlight is the absolute kind of ridiculousness sometimes of these kind of fanatic followers of kind of any political movement, mm-hmm. you know, that just kind of will believe anything anyone says and are desperate to kind of have like a messiah to worship or whatever. It kind of takes the mickey out of the group of the followers of these kind of political movements or whatever, on how kind of easily manipulated some people can be. And they do kind of play on that a lot, which is kind of, it is quite funny as well. But yeah, they never actually take like, I think they're clever there because they could easily have gone straight in and took the mick out of like Jesus and kind of alienated a whole religious group, but they never did. Mm-hmm. And I think like that is why they're so clever, because they push the boundaries to an extent, but they don't go so far to alienate an entire group of people. But even so, like, even by going to that boundary, like, this film was banned in like loads of countries when it was released. Like, there were still countries that were like, no, we're not showing this, it's too offensive.
There were cinemas in England that I think there was 13 cinemas in England that didn't show it. I read last night they just thought it was too offensive. And actually there's a famous I'll send it to you in the group, and maybe I'll put it on on our Twitter. There's a famous interview between a particular religious member of the, is it the clergy you call it? Like some of the Python, including John Cleese, I can't remember who.
Is it on? It's on YouTube, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on YouTube, and then like they're just on like a talk show basically, they have like it's like one side versus the other, and they're just talking basically. And even now, the idea of people talking sat next to each other is just freaking me out because of COVID all year. But like, and they just kind of say like the point isn't we're not mocking Christianity or Jesus or Judaism or anyone, you know, anything like that. It's a vehicle for like poking fun at fanaticism, and you know the whole idea behind the scene when Graham Chapman, Brian's shouting to the crowd, the famous scene of he's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty boy. That scene where he says like you don't have to follow anybody.
Yeah.
You can be you can be your own people, and then you're all individuals, and then you all shout back, "We're all individuals." Yeah. And what I really like is the one guy in the background who goes, "I'm not."
Yeah, same.
That's one of my favorite little bits. But it's just that. I think it's that in a nutshell. That whole scene in a nutshell, really, is. And we know. I think we know now more than ever, don't we? Really, that offense is. You can take offense to anything, and I think it just takes a sensible head to understand these things. Like, I think if you were to not look at the content and jump into it straight away, you could probably go, "Yeah, that probably is offensive." But yeah, you have to look at the content.
Exactly. And context as well is huge, because I think it can be missed sometimes where people don't look at what the intention was behind the film.
Mm.
And I don't know, like, I didn't make a lot of notes, but while I was watching this, I thought it is kind of like they're promoting the idea of the individualist and to be your own self and make your own decisions and choose who you want to follow, if you want to follow anyone. If you don't, then good on you, do your own thing and stuff like that. It's quite, I wasn't around in 1979. I don't know what the vibe was like, but it seems to me like kind of quite a progressive message as well, because,
yeah,
you know, as technology came along, as people got a bit smarter and a bit wiser, Christianity and religion especially was questioned quite heavily. And not, when you look at things nowadays, it is a very prevalent topic in quite a lot of conversations. And I wonder if, once again, without comedy as a, I don't want to say safety net, but without comedy to probe and to pick apart some of the ideas, then would people still have these like really strong dogmatic views? One scene I really love, and it isn't my favorite scene, so I'll not ruin that part of the agenda, is the scene where they all go to the guy who is being like, he's getting stoned. Not 420 stoned. it almost becomes a debate on the power and the omnipotence of God. And it comes, this line comes into question, and this isn't verbatim, but it's really stuck out to me. And it's something I definitely think I said in my little primary school, my very religious primary school in Northern Ireland, that if God's so powerful, then why are my words going to hurt him? And I think he is that's kind of the point of the film. That kind of sums it up for me, where, all right, you think this guy is untouchable he's the fucking dude, but I can't have a little joke. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and they're all going to stone him to death for it. And then you look at the reaction that comes out about the film, and I was like, "Well, that kind of sums up."
With that reaction, they've actually proved a point. I imagine that's what they were sat around thinking. Well, the more you react, the more you're actually proving a point about the film in general. Mm-hmm. Shall we go on to some favorite scenes? Because I think, like, largely we've got you've always got like the technical aspect, the performances, and the scenes, and I think.
Yeah, so I know I mentioned it before, but one of my favourite scenes is the spaceship scene with the aliens, because it's just so ridiculous, and it does come out of nowhere, and it's not just used as a way to get Brian out of a sticky situation, because they could have written themselves out of that, in any which way, but you know they've used it because they're having these parallels. You know, you've got religion and kind of. You know, you're in Jerusalem with the Messiah, you know, it's like kind of Jesus Christ, you know, and then you've got aliens as well. Like, it's that kind of like juxtaposition. It's kind of so extreme, but yeah, it's kind of them pointing out that it's not just, you know, black and white. It's not just there's religion and you believe everything. But we have aliens as well. You know, we can have it all. Mm-hmm. They're all here.
That's a good point, actually. I didn't think of that.
Like, I don't think that they've just thrown it in. But it is, as well as that, like, if you just take it for face value, it is funny as fuck, because it's so daft. It's so daft. Like, the way it just, the cart, it's like it's a 2D drawing of a spaceship that comes through the sky and just, like, swoops him up. It's like, whoop, and then goes, it's just... Mm-hmm. Then they have a little... Then they even, like, fly into space and then they have a little, like a space battle, like a little spaceship battle, you know, firing like little laser beams at each other and stuff. And that in itself, it's like still like pretty cool considering it was like 1979. Like, it still looks pretty cool. It's not fucking Star Wars, but it still looks pretty cool. I do really like that scene. And obviously, I think like my number one scene it is the end. I love that song so much, and I just think it's brilliant. And I like the closing shot, the final shot with all of them on the crosses, on a kind of like real kind of dry deserted kind of hill almost, mm-hmm. with like a blue sky in the background and the sun shining. It's just perfect. I think it's perfect. I think, like, I don't think there are any other comedies that could pull that off. I don't think there's any other writers that could write that. I think them together, I think they are just geniuses. Like, obviously, yeah. Eric Idle as well, musically, for like creating that song and it becoming so, it's this synonymous with Monty Python. It's kind of people sing it, whistle it. I mean, I whistle it all the time. Like, and I don't really watch much Monty Python anymore, but it's always in my head, that song. And I think it's just brilliant. It is just brilliant. It's like the perfect way to end a film like that, I think.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of, you know, it's a catchy song, but it's also a funny song, and it's kind of got, it's a little bit rude as well. Like, it's just perfect. And like, that is hands down my favorite scene as well.
Amazing. Amazing. That's fantastic. Connor, did you have any that you picked up on that maybe like either whether they'd be your funniest or most memorable?
It's such a weird one for it to be one of my favorite scenes, but there's a scene with where all the prisoners are gone off to be executed, or not executed, sorry, crucified. And I can't remember which one of the Pythons it is that comes in, but he kind of plays the kind of Jack the Lad thief guy who is...
Oh yeah, Eric Idle.
Who's meant to be like Saint Dismas or something, like in actual Christianity. Eric Idle plays him, yeah. And they're like, you know, you see a couple of people go before him, and it's like, crucifixion, yeah, take your cross and go on it. Like, it's like a, almost like a, I don't know, like a moving business, like a, I don't know, factory line.
Conveyor belt of like people going free execution.
And he comes up and is like, no, actually they said I can go free, you know, I just have to take my stuff and go. And he's like, oh, well, off you go. Then he's like, I'm just pulling your leg, it's crucifixion, really. That scene is honestly, like, it shouldn't be funny. It shouldn't be fun. Like, it isn't, there's nothing complicated there. There's nothing complex. But it's just delivery and time and funny writing and also playing on the rule of three thing. And it just, it cracked me up. Like, it really, really did. And there's so many little offhand moments like that that just honestly left me almost in stitches, as well as the, near the start, the Blessed of the Cheesemakers thing. What the hell? Like,
that's one of the first things that I wrote down as like one of my favorites. Yeah,
it's so, and I didn't really get it. And then they have the response, and he's like, "Well, he's not saying all cheesemakers, and any farmer of dairy products." And stuff. Like, oh man, I love it. I love the little kind of jabs at that interpretation.
In that scene, I really like when they say, and then towards the end of the scene, he's like, "Oh, we're saying blessed are the meek," and he's like, "Oh, I'm glad the meek are getting something." They're always I'm gonna name like fucking three, I reckon. Here, I really like the scene with the Judean people's front and the people's front of Judea, because it's just John Cleese. Just I just love it when he exclaims stuff when they're just like, "Oh," he says, "Oh, are you the people's front of Judea," and he's like, "Piss off." It's like, that's never, and then just that whole scene, and then there's a fella on his own, and they're just like, "Splitters." I just felt like that whole scene is like one of my favorites. And the bit where they're discussing where the guy wants to be a woman, and it's just that whole scene in a microcosm is just like an excellent discussion about absolutely everything that is probably prominent today.
Yeah, like, definitely. I thought that. I remember I was thinking that as well. It's like, that is a conversation that would be had today.
It really is, isn't it? Where the what is it they say? They're kind of just like, we'll fight for your right to have babies, even though you can't have babies. And it's like, what's the bloody point? It's gone. Yeah. It's just like that whole scene is just really, really great. And honestly, I could just pick any. Like, I just went through them. It's just like scene, just writing them all down. I won't even probably choose one because I can't. So let's just touch on. So we touched on the performances a little bit earlier, didn't we? So that was the next point on my agenda.
Yes.
I think we should talk about it a bit more, because they are actually like, you know, I mean, every, but maybe if you blend performances and kind of legacy into it all, because all of them, apart from Graham Chapman, who died in 89, which is quite sad, all of them have had success on other things. Like, every last one of them have had, like, quite great success. Even Eric Idle, who had success with the stage show, Spamalot for Monty Python. They've all gone on to do things that you just know. Like, and I think, arguably, maybe Terry Gilliam is, like, kind of... I don't know whether he's the most successful, but in terms of, like, probably critically acclaimed, he's done a lot of films that have, you know, that have kind of hit the heights. Mm-hmm. And it kind of goes with, I suppose, what Liam was saying before, is they're just kind of our geniuses, aren't they, in a way? Like, to have such a sustained period of success on things that don't include other Python members. So, like, Fawlty Towers with John Cleese, like, on his own, mm-hmm. doing his own thing. And I just think that's really interesting. And it does, you know, I think you can get lightning in a bottle, I imagine. But it's actually in 30, 40, 50 years' time, whether people are still into that, both that and what you go and do, that make you a genius. And I just kind of wanted to touch upon that as a general chat, because I think it deserves it, really.
I agree with you. And as someone who doesn't really know that much, like I touched on, like, Gilliam is the only one I really know, and I've watched quite a lot of his stuff. But even still, like, his legacy individually is something that a lot of people who love film or aspire to be filmmakers or just enjoy nice art. Gilliam, somebody stands out quite well because he is someone who fits into a lot of different boxes. And I think that's something that the Pythons kind of pioneered, this weird kind of, everyone is a polyglot. They've got their own thing that they specialize in, but also they're a dab hand in not just acting, but maybe writing as well. And maybe actually stage design, or some of them probably had a hand in the editing process or even the directing of it. And you see people that go from, once again, to go back to Gilliam, started off as like just like the creative director, essentially, where he not only helped the production design, but kind of came up with the art, and the opening credits of The Life of Brian are amazing. Like, I was watching it like, what the hell is this? And then obviously I remembered, this is probably Terry Gilliam. And he's made one of my favorite films ever, Brazil. And since then, I've just always loved him. And seeing his influence without being, you know, the central figure or like the main mind behind the film is really interesting, because you see little moments. And Liam touched on earlier, he has his own little cameos in it as well.
Yeah, so the thing, so Terry Gilliam was obviously in America, and I can't quite remember. I've watched a long documentary that's on Netflix about the Pythons, and he was in America just doing this thing on Mad Magazine, which is like an old kind of, I don't know if it's satirical, but it's like a classic comedy magazine that they had in like kind of the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And they met and came over, and actually his influence on, so he joined the Pythons from then on, and his influence on the series actually is probably, I think that watching the film first and then the series maybe probably does him a disservice, because in the series there's, you'd kind of say a large chunk of it is like his like crazy wacky drawings and like mad imagery, and like a lot of it is like narrated by the Pythons, where you see this, the mad stuff happening on camera. And I think like, if you like I would suggest you watch that anyway, but I think if you like Terry Gilliam and his artistic direction, I'd watch Flying Circus, because it's just absolutely bananas, but like, oh, really, nice. Really good. Yeah, it's like what you've just seen in them. It's like the alien scene, and kind of like the more surreal bits in a microcosm. And I just wanted to add that, because I think if you haven't seen the series, you would probably, like you said then, he's more behind the scenes, which he absolutely is, but there's not more to like what he does earlier on in like the series.
Do either of you guys know much about the other Pythons, where it is John Cleese or Michael Palin or Eric Idle? Like, I feel like their collective involvement is kind of all over this. So praising one of them for a certain thing almost feels reductive. Do you know what I mean? When they're also, it's all one big cohesive unit that works in tandem.
So the way they worked on the series was, especially, and it moved over to this, was that they all had their own partners. So they were all like, they didn't all know each other. They all came about separately from working at the BBC and from working at Cambridge Footlights, which is like a comedy troupe. And they came together in like pairs or like a 2 or 3, and then Gillian was separate. Mm-hmm. So they would write together typically. And like, there's a story goes that as like time went on, and like, this is obviously the second movie they did, they felt things were getting stale and they didn't really want to do a third movie, which went on to be The Meaning of Life. And it's just really interesting how, you're right, their footprint is all over it, but they actually worked in pairs and then came together.
Ah, that's weird.
And maybe the movie was slightly different because there has to be like a thread rolling through it. But that's how they worked on the series. They go away, and I think John Cleese worked with Chapman and the other guys worked together, and they'd like, you'd come together to have like, and basically call each other sketches shit and be like, we're not dealing with this. This is crap, but this is good. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it would really be interesting to see like how they work together.
It's almost like one of the original writers' rooms, isn't it? Where you have all these like, we always say genius gets thrown around quite a lot, but you can look at their legacy now and say that at least some of them are genuinely, you could be considered geniuses, if not already are considered that. Having all these people come together and working on the same thing, it just augments all of it. Everything gets better because everything is at such a high level that the bar is so high that if you're not 10 out of 10 funny, it's not going in. It's not staying in. And it's a really short film too, as well. Like it's just under or just over, I think, an hour and a half. So there's not a lot of room to, it might look like a bunch of fellas mucking around, but there's not a lot of room to actually do that. Everything is quite concise and plays out it's quite a neat film, if that makes sense. Like it's quite rushed and it's quite rough around the edges, but at the same time, it's really lean and everything progresses at the right time as it should do.
There's not much moving around. They are, I think it's very sketch orientated in the way that like the only scene where you're like moving from kind of one place to another is the scene with the crucifixion. And mm-hmm. really then you're not, you know, so it's like you could probably take each of them out and be like, this is a sketch on its own, this could go into the series, this is a sketch. So I wonder whether they work like that and kind of give each other bits. But you're right, if it's not funny, they'd just be like, this is shit, we're not using it. Mm-hmm. And that must be really hard work, but you've come up with one of the greatest, you know, probably it's between that and Spinal Tap, in my opinion, which are the greatest comedy movies of all time.
Comedies, yeah.
So
yeah, fair enough. Exactly. Yeah. And it is like, it's one of those things, like you've talked about it, Liam, where it is the actual filmmaking is quite rough almost. Like they do a lot of simple scenes, and you've talked about it as well, Luke, where they don't do movement really, but when they use handheld, it isn't steady. There was no steady cam back then. Well, there probably was, but I don't think they wanted to use it. And I kind of like that because it might not fit the narrative that well, but it does make you feel like it's accessible. You're kind of not like you're in Jerusalem, but you know, you're in the action of what's going on between. And people say that tragedy's a close up and comedy's a long shot, so you can see all of it. And I love that they kind of incorporate all types of comedy in this. As someone who isn't a big comedy guy, they use satire, they use slapstick comedy, they use kind of pastiche, and they use a bit of nonsense as well. And that's what makes it so heartwarming and so endearing. And for such a cynical dickhead like me to be like, I really love this film, I think that speaks volumes. Not that my opinion is high and mighty. I'm not Brian. I'm not the Messiah. Don't follow me.
No.
What I think you say, though, is, and this is my opinion that I've got, and I think an opinion that kind of works, mm-hmm. and a lot of people have, is that I actually think the best comedy makes you almost go, why didn't I think of that? How couldn't I do that? and with that, like you say, with the camera work, like it's not high-end Hollywood. So you're almost like, fuck, if I was that funny, maybe I could do that, but you're just not. You know, it's almost like, oh, that joke was so simple and so daft that like it's like I could have done it. But like if you do that for two series of a show, three films, and however many live shows after that, then you know,
I think as someone who watched the UK Office in my second year of uni and thought it would be a good idea to make a comedy film, don't do it. It's not worth it. I made a film.
You're never that funny. No one is ever that funny.
With a couple guys called Viewings, and it was about a guy who sells houses, but the houses are haunted and he knows they're haunted. And it was kind of like a spoof.
That's pretty good.
You think it is. But when you look at this and you look at the genius of Gervais and the Pythons and all those guys, yeah,
I've got to say, Connie, you don't come across to me as the as a comedy writer.
No, yeah, exactly.
Were you Terry Gilliam in that process, man? Yeah.
No, I didn't really go to many of the workshops actually, so I don't know who I was.
You know, what's crazy to think is that, you know, what we wouldn't have if the Pythons didn't exist, you know, mm-hmm. like we wouldn't have like Alan Partridge and we wouldn't have, I don't know, like the sketch comedies that have been popular maybe of the last, you know, 20 years or so. I'm saying Little Britain because I liked it when I was younger, but obviously some people it's become maybe problematic now, but yeah, just things like that, that kind of, they just wouldn't exist without exactly. Python. I think the one that does stick out to me is Alan Partridge because, like, he is my favorite. I think Alan Partridge is my favorite comedy character, mm-hmm. like, of all time. But it's like, it's crazy, like, their influence on just like TV and film and comedy. It's just, it's crazy. It's ridiculous. It's incredible, really.
It's funny.
It's also the likes of kind of Jim Carrey. He's so Python and so like, a bit of John Cleese and a bit of this and a bit of that. And there's like the documentary series that I was talking about earlier, it's also on Netflix. It's like an official Python documentary. I think it's 9 episodes, which takes you from Cambridge or Oxford to about 5 years ago, which it took really good. And just the people that they've got as talking heads. Like you watch Talking Heads and it's kind of like just these people you just never heard of. And then you watch this and it is like Jim Carrey. You're talking like all absolute A-listers, you know, and I think we think of this as like a British thing, which it is, but they sold out the Hollywood Bowl numerous times. If you know, they are literally the, you know,
they're the guys, aren't they? They're all I think we normally when we do big films that have like a big following or have came out ages and years and fucking whatever ago, legacy is really important and continuing that. And we saw that, like, all right, some of them might have said some questionable things recently, and we're not going to talk about that at all. But when you look at the legacy of a film, like The Life of Brian and what it inspired, you can't really deny that it's great. Mm. Even if I went into this and didn't like it, with the legacy argument, you know, it's had such a wide and such a potent impact on so many comedians that we all love now, or not even maybe not even comedians, so many artists that we all love now, that you can really do nothing else but hold your hands up and applaud or give popcorns if you want.
Yeah, that's a perfect chance to move on to popcorns. Is there anyone who's just got any other business before we do that, or are we all right?
Always.
I just want to say that there's so many scenes that we've just not talked about. That
I know.
Like if we had like 5 hours, we could do 5 hours, but
yeah,
we don't, because we've just got lives and jobs and work and... You know, I've got to put some more baubles on my Christmas tree. So so let's go with popcorn. So, Connor, do you want to give us your popcorns as usual? It was your first take.
Oof. Our solidarity, I think. Like, as a big film, in quotation marks, guy, as a film, it doesn't really, I don't really, like, it's not amazing. But legacy, lolometer, if that's a thing that my mind might be now. Laugh to minute ratio is up there. Do you know what I mean? Like it is, it's just enduring and it's endearing and it is, yeah, it was so good. I loved it. I will 100% watch it in the next week, probably.
That's amazing. Liam, do you want to go with your popcorns?
Yeah, I was going to go as well with a solid 80 as well. I feel like I'm copying Connor today, but no, definitely a solid 80. It 100%, it deserves that at least.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe I think it probably, if I watched it again more recently, because it's been so long since I watched it. Mm-hmm. But I think 80 is quite fair.
I mean
it's a solid film. It's hilarious, but as Connor said, the film side of it is
it's a little rough,
but you know, it's Python, it's gonna be
great. I just didn't mention a piece of trivia that I had, that George Harrison.
Oh, yeah.
bought up half the money for the film, so he like funded half this film.
Really? Yeah, I knew that.
They couldn't get money for it, I imagine, because of the actual subject matter. So they went to America and spoke to numerous people that they knew, and a couple of Pythons had got close to George Harrison over like the years previous. So they just turned up at his house one day and were like, "Do you want to give us £2 million for this film?" And he was like, "Yeah, go on then." I actually think Pink Floyd, they did the same with Holy Grail with Pink Floyd as well. Pink Floyd put money towards it. Basically, what's so cool about this film is all the cool guys just love the Python. I think it attracts you to them more.
Yeah. I think Pink Floyd did some of them. Did Pink Floyd not do some of the music on the Holy Grail?
I don't know.
Am I imagining things? I'm sure they might.
Yeah. But anyway, I'll give that. That was just a little bit. And I wish we could have gone on to that a bit more because I think it's quite interesting, but such is life. My popcorn is a solid 93. Solid 93 because it's just honestly perfect to me. I mean, it's 7 off perfect, I suppose, but it's perfect. but you know, you've got to leave room for, you know, maybe, I don't know, Flying Circus. Okay, cool. So I'm really glad we got to do that film. And I do really wish we could do it for like hours and hours and hours, but we can't. So next week we're tackling Mank. We've been trying to tackle this film for a few weeks. And we just had some technical hitches. Namely, we can't get our hands on the film because it's not even out there yet. But is it out now? It's out now, isn't it?
It's out on Friday.
By the time you're listening, it will be out on Netflix.
So if you want to watch along while we talk about it, then feel free. So we're going to do that. It's new David Fincher boy, so that's obviously very exciting. So I think like we're all Fincher fans, aren't we? So that's pretty big for us. So next week is going to be a big one. I think just follow us on Insta, on Twitter, at First Take Pods. Do all your following. We've got Facebook as well, First Take Film Club. Tell all your friends, and if you know, we've done some real classic films in the last like kind of month since the second lockdown. Really, we've really covered a lot of classic movies and a lot of big movies as well. And this is just another in the line of them. So tell your mates, please. And I think that leaves us just to say goodbye and to say, in these strange times, always look on the bright side of life.